Measuring yourself is easy in some respects, like your age, your height, your weight, but not so easy in others, like your character, integrity, and maturity. But those are the real measurements we should be focusing on. Your quantitative info doesn't define who you are, it's your qualitative info that does. But growth doesn't just happen. It takes intentional accountability on your part. So welcome to The Measuring Post, a place where we can learn and grow together.
Hello and welcome to another edition of The Measuring Post. My name is Joe Massa, the host of The Measuring Post, and today I've got a really fun episode with somebody you're really going to love, and I really like this topic because not only in my house do we have some artists with my children, my cousin who, rest in paradise, was taken from us about 6 years ago, he was a phenomenal artist, so I really love the art angle that we're going to talk about today. But today I have Karen DeLoach. She is an award-winning artist, an art teacher, she's an author, minister, of course, wife, mother, and grandmother, and a speaker and coach. She's got her Bachelor of Fine Arts in Painting and Drawing and a Master's degree in Studio Art. So please welcome today Mrs. Karen DeLoach. How are you, Karen?
I'm blessed to be here. Thank you so much, Joe, for having me.
Absolutely. I knew that we had to get you on the show as soon as we had our pre-interview, and I'll let you kind of explain what you do with art, but your story has been really fun to just go through and read about, not only from you just being an artist yourself, but what you've done with that art and how you've taught others and how you use your art to help people get through things in their life. So I'll kind of open up the floor to you. Just give me a little bit of background. What really started your artistic journey, and was this something just born into you? You knew you were an artist from day one?
Well, actually, no. I was way more interested in theater and storytelling. I have an Irish storytelling father who was on vaudeville as a youth. And so being very theatrical was part of my upbringing. And I was a kindergartner leading the other children in plays in the playground. So arts didn't start out, you know, strictly painting and drawing didn't start out my interest, more theater. And I was very involved. But I had a really good art teacher that taught me to draw. And I didn't know I had that talent. And so when I went to art school, it was because it wasn't as easy. I also went to a liberal arts college where I could take all the theater I wanted and was very involved in that as well. And I did really good in art school until it came time to work on painting. And unfortunately, my painting teachers were not interested in my representational or naturalistic kind of style that I was interested in. I love portraits. I love portraits of people, animals, places. And they were much more involved in abstract expressionism. And I just wasn't that interested in that. And unfortunately, after trying four different teachers, all of them declaring my work was expletive deleted, I went into sculpture and ceramics for graduate school. Agreeing that I was a hopeless painter. But inside, I really still wanted to paint. And every time I'd try for those next years, their words would reiterate through my brain, "You can't do it. You're not a painter. You're terrible." And I know they were just trying to save the world from another bad painter, but to me, their words were devastating. And I got a mentor that taught me how to paint that changed my life forever. I really, really benefited from the actual learning the basics and the fundamentals of painting. And so that's part of my concept as a teacher. I learned, number one, words matter. What you say to people matter. What I discovered later in research is that our right brain, creative side of us is very sensitive, which is a good thing, but it can be wounded easily. And I can't tell you how many people I've come across who say, "Oh yeah, I can't draw, I can't paint, I can't sing, I can't dance." Well, who told you that? Why do you think that's true? Because so-and-so said this. It may be a parent, a teacher, or even peers that convinced you that you couldn't do it. Because I'm telling you, we have half our brain devoted to creativity, and now I am passionate about sharing with people. If half your brain is for creativity, then what is your creative niche? What's your creative gifting? And I ask people, look at what you were doing at 4 and 5 and 5 and 6, because science says that 98% of 5 and 6 year olds are creative geniuses, but only 2% of adults.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that the children definitely have that creative edge over adults. You kind of grow into the life that you have to take care of all your bills. You got all the adult responsibilities. So you lose that creative edge. But you said something I want to go back to, I think is really awesome, that the words matter from teachers, especially if you talk down, even if you are not being told this from a teacher, if you talk down to yourself, those words are very powerful. If you tell yourself that you can't draw or you can't be an athlete or you can't be good at science or math or whatever you're telling yourself, those really carry weight. So I think we do have to be very careful with our words. And it reminded me of a cool story actually from none other than Arnold Schwarzenegger. And when he was just wrapping up his bodybuilding career, he did this interview on, he was like the Johnny Carson show, or maybe David Letterman. It was probably not Johnny Carson, but he was talking about how he decided he wanted to be in acting, and he went to an agent, and the agent said, there's no way, you got this weird name, you got this crazy accent, you're this big, bulky, weird-looking guy, you know, you're not a normal actor, just, you know, give up on your dream. And he told the guy, like, no, you're wrong, and you'll find out. So then obviously he goes on to be this mega Hollywood star. And now that guy's no longer a talent agent. So I like that the idea you can also look the haters in the face and say, okay, I see what you're saying, but I don't believe you. And just believe in yourself and go out there and put your art out there, whether it's drawing, painting, sculpting, or acting, which you also do. I'm told that you're also a bit of an actress yourself. But tell me a little bit about your teaching and mentorship style and, you know, where people can find you and what you offer.
Yeah, that's I appreciate that, because, you know, creating a safe space to try something new, which, you know, if you're an adult and you remembered loving to draw, loving to paint, loving to sculpt, or, you know, loving to sing, I can tell you a story about that, but you haven't done it because someone along the way hurt your feelings, you know, and that's real. Those feelings, those right brain sensitive part of us, gets bullied by the right brain that remembers those words and convinces us. So my style is, I create a safe space. This is a no criticism zone. And I know people think that, oh, well, you can't get better if you don't have criticism. Well, there's criticism. Criticism comes from the left brain. And I'm trying to get my students to develop and to really operate in their right brain. And that requires, you know, shutting that one down a little bit. Actually, the goal is to combine using left brain, right brain, which when you pick up a pencil, pick up a paintbrush, you're actually using your left brain also. So you want to build these neural connections together. And when you do that, you become your most brilliant self. And that's true for everybody, not just the 2% of us that identify in the arts. And that's true of music and singing. So I started seeing students getting healing, because I was a homeschool art teacher for a long time before I taught in college. And I had a lot of autistic students, or students who were ADHD or had dyslexia, and they weren't thriving in the academic world. Their parents were studying and trying to find all these ways to help their children, and it wasn't working. And this particular young man came to me completely depressed, convinced he was worthless, would never learn, could never graduate from high school. And it was too big a goal for him. So I just started teaching him drawing, painting, sculpture. And that child took to it like a duck to water. He started thriving in it. And I began entering my students' work in this huge youth art competition in our state. And they started winning ribbons and awards and even money. And for him, it changed his life. It gave him the confidence that he really truly needed to buckle down and to try the things his mother was setting before him. Changed his life. He graduated from high school after winning best in show in that youth art competition. And, you know, he proved to me that there is something about the arts. And I didn't even understand left brain, right brain, and neural connections at that time. I just saw it in action. I saw it, how it changed me when I could shut down that, I call, left brain bully from convincing me I couldn't paint. Because it was saying, you're just proving those teachers right, you know, every time I failed. And I had all these unfinished canvases until I actually got the skills I needed. Fortunately, we live in an era where we are so rich in teachings online, all of us. And most of my teaching now is online, and anybody, anywhere can get involved. I have a art subscription group. You can get more information on www.karendelocheart.com, and we can work together, or you can call me or talk to me first or email me, and we can discuss, you know, what is your giftings? Because it's not just drawing and painting. They all matter. Can I tell one more story before I put it back?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, of course.
So one of the studies I read had to do with singing in the shower. So I don't know. Are you a singer in the shower, Joe?
In the shower, I'm actually like Frank Sinatra, most amazing voice you've ever heard. But outside of the shower, it's a whole different ballgame. But please go on. I would love to hear your story.
So, they tested people singing in the shower. So one of the things about the arts, when you engage your right brain, you release something called serotonin, which is the happiness chemical. So there you are. You're in the shower, rub-a-dub-dubbing, scrubbing. You're not trying to solve any world's problems. You're just singing, having a good time. You get out, you feel great. You release the serotonin. And an idea comes to you because you've been building those neural connections, left brain, right brain. A solution, maybe it is something you've been dwelling on at work or relational, or it's some idea comes that you weren't even thinking about. But because you now are making these brilliant connections in your brain, a new pathway formed with an answer. I'm telling you, it happens so much that it's not a coincidence, and scientists could prove it. Now, that was exciting. I sing in the car when nobody's around. So it's good for you. Do it. Sing. Enjoy it. You don't have to be, a Pavarotti to enjoy singing. You can even be an alto off key like me and still enjoy it.
I love that, but you're 100% correct. You do have to release that creative juice, for lack of a better term, every once in a while. And it does spark a lot of creative ideas. And it's because you've kind of opened up that faucet of letting that creative outlet be, released. And as somebody that can barely draw stick figures, I don't think drawing or painting is in my future, but maybe the karaoke circuit going national. That's my art. So I don't think I've found my hidden artistic creativity niche yet, but I've done a lot of voice acting and things. Sure, yeah, encourage me. But, it's funny because my wife also, not very artistic, but my son came out and he's 17 now and he's like unbelievable. He doesn't quite have the passion, but, some of his artwork has won awards at his high school and, all the way down elementary to high school, multiple awards. He's been featured in buildings all over the state, libraries and Barnes and Nobles, and it's just like, where did this come from? And he just, he never practiced. He just, as a little kid, picked up a pencil and was like drawing Mario and Luigi. And I was like, this is like really good for like a 5-year-old. And my daughter, who's 11 now, is starting to have some of that. So this leads me to a question, and I think I probably know the answer, but do you think that art in a sense is also somewhat genetic or hereditary? Like if you've got a good artist in the family, you're prone to have others?
Well, I think it absolutely is true, but and it can, the fact that my father was in vaudeville and my mother's father sang in a group on stage. So, there was definitely something to that, but it skipped his kids. Neither one of them, my uncle or my mother, were involved in that, but probably half of their grandchildren are. So there, it's interesting. Genetics can have a factor. And certainly if your mom was a great knitter and taught you to knit, you probably are good, or maybe making quilts was in the family and you love making quilts. So there's just different things that we can inherit, either, design or, environment. But I think that the fact that we are all born, I guess 99.999% of us born with a right brain, that has a creative center in it that tells me that everyone is a creative. You are a podcaster. You have to deal with all the left brain things of technology and order and timeliness and finding clients, but then you're also creating content that's never been made before. So there is a creative aspect to this, that you're already engaging left brain, right brain, and you're operating your most brilliance as a podcaster. And if you wanted to learn to draw, you could, if it was in you to draw. And I encourage you to get your daughter some drawing classes. I've got a group that meets 3 times a month live. We're doing drawing right now, and it's getting skills and encouraging people to develop those skills, and if that's what they want, or what is it that you do want to be creatively engaged in. I have a 3-part pop-up podcast that is for free, that talks more about all kinds of ways to be creative, including gardening, cooking. There's so many ways that we can be creative. Here's one way. I know your listeners, here's a simple way besides singing in the shower or car, is taking a stroll. Okay. We've been pitched the Fitbit, aerobic walk and count your steps, but this is a stroll. Well, maybe you've got a pet or a loved one to just take a stroll, notice the surroundings, listen to the birds singing, notice the sky or the sun setting or sun rising if you're an early riser, and just enjoy being in the world for 15 minutes and see if that doesn't do the same thing, stir up left brain, right brain, creative brilliance.
Yeah, so I got to go back to one thing, and then I would like to talk about the stroll, because I actually do that, and I read about that, and I personally love doing that. But see art teacher Nancy Kerrigan, that's not her name, that's a figure skater, but I was told I was not artistic in school also, but doing podcasts makes me very artistic, so thank you, Karen. And, I have a cheat card for that. I just bring on people like you who do all the creative talking, and I just make sure I don't stumble over my words too bad. Although I bring up a 1990s figure skater, Nancy Kerrigan.
I remember her. She got beat up by Tanya.
We were actually talking about that in the car the other day, and it's weird that's the first name that popped in my head. But to go back to your strolling, I read about that, like, just getting outside and doing a walk also is really good for coming up with ideas, and it's good for business. Like when I get stuck on something, I step away for a while and I'll just go walk around the block a couple times or go to the park. And a lot of times it does kind of free you up because you stop hyper-focusing on what you think you need to do. And instead you just kind of let things come in into you and flow into your brain and help you kind of release your creative energy, for lack of a better term. But I definitely do like that. And there was another cool story, I believe it was Ernest Hemingway, the writer, who talked about, you know, how do you avoid writer's block? And he said, anytime I get into like a really good groove and I'm writing and everything's coming out as gold and I'm loving it, I stop writing right then. And they go, why would you stop right when you're like in the creative mode? He goes, because eventually I'm going to stall out at that point. But if I leave it in a really good place and I walk away for a little bit, I can come back to a really good cliffhanger and it kind of re-energizes that creative moment. So I thought that was a really cool sort of way to think about it. But yeah, stepping away and letting the creativity flow through you, I think, is probably a really good piece of advice.
You know, it's fun too. And that's the thing. What makes you have fun? You know, the sports, interestingly enough, have a lot of connection with this too, because when I teach drawing, I'm teaching eye-hand coordination. I'm requiring my students to actually draw what we're looking at. Which, if you can throw and catch a ball, which when we have a baby that sits up, we're rolling a ball to them, right? We want them to roll it back to us. These are skills that all of us have, whether we're athletic or not. But I found that many, many athletes also are very good in the arts, because they have been developing that connection. If they get some good training, they can definitely be exploring their creative life that way. So it's fun, these connections. I'd like to tell one more story. This one's a little bit dramatic. But I had a young man who really excelled in the arts and was one of my really good homeschool students. And unfortunately, at 18, he had a stroke from a brain infection. They had to remove his skull from the infection. He has a plastic skull to this day. He wasn't talking, walking, responding at all. They didn't know if he was going to live. They did as much therapy as they could in the hospital. When they released him in 4 months, he was walking with a walker, dragging the right side of his body. He couldn't talk. So his mom brought him right back to my studio. And I said, well, you know, your left hand works. The right side of his body was paralyzed, but he could use his left hand. I said, okay, let's just draw left-handed. Let's paint left-handed. Let's write left-handed. And in a short amount of time, that young man could draw and paint as well with his left hand as he could with his right. And he was an award-winning artist. I got a call from his neurosurgeon. I said, what are you doing with David? He's stronger with his weak hand than I am, and I'm a neurosurgeon. And he's getting healing on the right side of his body. Now, I'm not a brain scientist, but there's plasticity in our brain. One part breaks down, another part can function. In a very short amount of time, he was talking and walking. And if you see that young man now, he's not in depression. He talks a little slower, got his sense of humor. Walk. He's living a life that he would not have been able to live if he hadn't engaged in the arts. They're finding that at Walter Reed Hospital, that the soldiers that were struggling and had had all the therapy they could, they went through a special program in the summer. And at the end of the summer, they had tried all kinds of things. And the that when they interviewed them, they said, what was your favorite thing this summer? And these are soldiers. They said, the arts, doing art. It changed their life. It brought healing and release and relief in them. So I'm saying this to you and to your audience, to your listeners, that if there is something niggling inside that says, man, I'd love to do that again. I'd love to sing. I'd love to dance. I just took a line dancing class. I'm 70 years old. It's not too late. And I'm telling you that creativity is there and it's fun. We forget the fun factor sometimes, as you described, the way life can overwhelm us with duties and responsibilities, and we forget to have fun until we have grandchildren. We get to do that with them. But fun, as a matter of fact, even Albert Einstein, considered by very many people the greatest creative genius of the 20th century, said, creativity is intelligence having fun. He said some things about imagination, too. And that all comes from the right brain, imagination, creativity, inventiveness. You wanted to write, you know, and those strolls that Joe and I were just talking about. Maybe tuck in your sketchbook or your journal underneath your arm while you walk. Find a bench, and maybe some ideas as they hit you then. Or maybe poetry is you know, a genre you enjoy, and it just can flow. It's never too late, and I want to encourage each one of you to explore your creative side.
I want to correct you, because you said, I want to tell you one more story. It's a bit dramatic. I thought that was beautiful. I love that story. I don't think dramatic is the right word because of the ending. And really the power of art as therapy is something that I think most people wouldn't consider. Like if you're not only for depression, but like for a physical ailment, like he had his skull removed. That's, you would not think that the first thing you would try is art, but it's cool to see that just, and again, the plasticity of the mind, you're 100% correct. Like when something is not functioning, you get overcompensation from a different portion of the brain. And to hear a story where somebody went through something that significant, but was able to regain not only some healing on the side of the body that was paralyzed, but to find like a new purpose and to sort of just rebuild that confidence and you know, zest for life. I think that was a beautiful story. So I would lead with that one. That's a good one. I really like that.
All right, I got one more. If you got time for one more. This is an older student of mine before I was teaching college. She loved doing sculpture. And I was working on a great big program, a big, big room installation, porcelain installation that was happening in 9 months. And I was going to elicit her help. And she came to me and said, Karen, I've just been diagnosed with late stage cancer and I have been given 6 months to live. Well, we cried together. And I said, look, why don't you come in the studio anyway? Come and work with me. You know, in between all your radiation and chemotherapy, you know, surgeries, come and have fun in the studio with me. She's like, Karen, I don't even know if I'm going to be here in 9 months for that show. I'm like, you know what? You'll leave a legacy for your family. So she did. She started coming to the studio, and we would have a blast. Just working with the clay, coming up with ideas. It was called Taste and See Sweet Shop. And we were making cakes and cupcakes and candies and cookies and truffles and figuring out, you know, what glaze would be dark chocolate versus milk chocolate and solving these problems. Well, sure enough, she was there 9 months later. And that 17-day huge show, part of a Charleston Piccolo Spoleto show. And got to work the show, and in a very short amount of time was actually considered in remission. And now, a few years later, she is actually cancer-free. Now, no doctor called me that time, but she's convinced, her family's convinced, that she could have given up, you know, and accepted that 6 months to live diagnosis, or she chose to have fun, think about things that are beautiful and enjoyable to her, and have a project to, you know, have a goal in her life. And she's still enjoying her family and living cancer-free. So what is it? What is it in your life that you need to be creative for?
Yeah. And, you know, on our podcast, I've done a couple cancer shows with people currently, a good friend of mine, stage 4 currently, and some people that have been in remission for a long time. And one thing that stands out always is that having something to look forward to or be positive about. And, you know, it sounds like the gal you're talking about, just being a part of that art show was something to not make her give up. Like, I'm not going to quit. always, always have something that you're building for, even if you know that, and I hate to say it this way, but like if the end is nearing based on a prognosis or something you have going on in your life, I feel like if you have something to continue doing, that in itself is a way to like extend your time, because your mind and your heart are saying, no, I still have more to do. I still have more to do. So, you know, you fight just that much harder. But that's a touching story just because I've got some friends going through that. And my good buddy especially, he's such a positive guy, and it's just infectious. And he's just getting – every day he's getting some bad news. And every day he's still just like, nope, feeling great. Everything's great. You know, just going to keep going, keep fighting. And I think that's something to consider when you're going through tough times is – where can you release something, whether it's art or poetry or reading or spirituality? Just having that outlet, I think, is very powerful. So,
amen. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, just in my small little survey, and you know, even teaching in college, I had a variety of ages of students, and you know, I ended up writing the textbook for the school, and I mean, for the class, and because I knew my students were in a more rural state, and they weren't going to be taking art the rest of their lives, and I had one chance to expose them to the incredible richness of Western art history. And in my subscription group, I exposed my students to art, some of our art history masterpieces, and got them excited about art. Even if they didn't ever do art again, they now had an opinion and had art in their life and in their world. And I think that we all should. What do you love? Let, you know, buy some prints. They're cheap to buy prints. You know, we have galleries all over our city in Charleston, and it's fun. You can get, you know, see some of your favorite things, even buy note cards and frame them or use them. You know, surround yourself with beauty. It really does lift up your soul, lifts up your right brain. It gets excited and stimulates those parts to your brain. So I encourage everyone to put art in their life or music in their life. Most of us, it's easier to get music in our life than it is art these days. But I encourage you to do so.
What I really like, Karen, is that you don't just preach these things. You actually walk the walk also. So not only are you an award-winning artist, you like you said, your dad was in vaudeville, which is, look it up, young kids, that's acting, 1920s and 30s. It's a style. But you actually went back to film school in your 50s, and then you took that and created a Ugandan film school, which is bonkers. How did that come to play? And tell us a little bit about going back to school in your 50s and then what you're doing with that currently.
Well, I just, like I said, love storytelling. My husband and I were ministering to a group of college students who were all very creative, and they encouraged me. They were taking script writing, and they said, you know, we want to have our own company. And, you know, that was in the early 2000s, was the early shift between film and the digital world. Now we just take digital filmmaking for granted. But then it was just in that transitional period, and I knew things were changing. I could feel it. And so I just took every course at our community college, which has the best film school in our state, and took every course and just really was soaking it up in order to be an independent filmmaker was my goal. And we have professors of the old, no, nothing can replace film. Film is God. And then they have the young people, but you know, digital filmmaking is getting close. And now they have digital cameras. I mean, my DSLR camera doesn't have as much pixelation as my, you know, iPhone 14. Okay. So we have a handheld device for creating movies. Well, I got an opportunity in 22 to go on a missions trip to Uganda. A church was adopting, well, rescuing these young people off the streets, literally in all kinds of situations that we don't even want to think about. But these young people have lived through. And so they wanted to stir up their creativity. So I went as the art teacher and storyteller. And that pastor has a heart for film. And I'm like, you know, I've never been to Africa before. It's seven time zones away, okay? And I didn't have any clue how to do it, but they talked me into it after being there. You know what? We can get internet on our phone, and no matter what's going on, we can connect. So in October 22, we started a film school with these young people, and they have soaked it up so much, and we've made a film each year. We just finished one that was produced in December called A Christmas Miracle, which they dedicated to my little grandson who was born 10 weeks premature. And you know, so it's a story about a baby that's born to a young teenager. Anyway, it's a really cool little story, and they are just running with it. You know, I've taught them everything I knew. And I was concerned when I first started, teaching them. You know, I know Western filmmaking. You know, I know our three-part story framework, act one, act two, act three. I can teach them what I know, but I don't know how to make it Ugandan. Well, I had no fears because they make it Ugandan. They have their own style, their own way to create these movies that wouldn't be Western at all. And I celebrate that. And as I talk to them after the production and I say, so what did you think? How do you feel? And they're in tears are saying, I didn't know I could do anything like this. I had no clue this was in me. More and more are coming up and saying, we want to be in the next film. We want to be, so I started at the very beginning, what's your log line? What are your ideas? Let's go through your ideas. They're very evangelistic because they've come from such bad things that they really want to know how to, tell other people how to get rescued too. So they have, definite goals in mind, and it's just beautiful to see them thriving in it, and some of them wanting to study more. They want, of course, build a film school there, so we might be able to do that with enough donations. We've been buying them equipment, bit by bit as we can, and raising money for them, and they just are so grateful. They have grateful hearts, and it's a pleasure to work with them.
I love that story, and I'll make a quick note because you didn't finalize. The preemie grandbaby is doing very well.
Right, yes, now. He is.
I want to make sure that we're like, well, what about the grandbaby? He's doing well. We talked about that before we started this interview, so I just wanted to make a note of that. But it sounds like you guys are also in pre-production for the next film for the Ugandan.
Already, so yep. This month is okay.
What's that one going to be about? Or is it too early to tell us?
No, that's exactly what this month is. Okay, we got to start with those log lines. There's one sentence that sums up the whole movie. What one sentence is your idea? That's a log line. We call it a log line. I started teaching that. Well, what's your favorite movie? What can you think of one sentence that describes that whole movie? What was the purpose of that movie? So, that's part of the teaching platform is they got to come up with the ideas. So we create sheets of the ideas. Everybody comes up with an idea. Let's start narrowing it down. Let's look at what resources we have. I mean, you're not going to make a movie about Alaska when you live on the equator, okay? So you look at who you are, what you have. You make sure that, this is a no-budgeted film company, so you're fine. Yeah. We raise some money here to help them have premieres and to get equipment and rent things that they don't have, and it's a different world. It's a 21st century, and you don't feel that way when you're there. I can tell you that it's a different world, but they have the same passion that we do to tell their story and to be creative and expressive, just like we all have.
I love that. And I think you're absolutely right. The passion is always there. It doesn't matter your environment. People are creative by nature, and they definitely have the same energy and desire and will to make beautiful, great things. And sometimes environment and circumstances inhibit that. But I love that you guys are making this a mission, part of a missionary movement to help this community build these beautiful things. And that kind of leads me to a question I wanted to ask before this. I think now I have to say that the filmmaking is your favorite part, but as an artist yourself and teacher, what is your favorite type of art to either do personally or to teach to others? Or is that like saying which one of your kids is your favorite? Is it like you just love them all the same?
Oh, Joe, you're so right. I all through the years teaching, I would do the art that I was teaching that month, and it's just so, you used to be called, you're a master of none, or jack of all trades, master of none, because there was so many things I was interested in. Yeah, I could see myself spend the rest of my life making movies, but I'm actually doing paintings for a movie that we shot that has need for some more B-roll. And since it's the 1600s, you don't have photography. You have, old paintings, and they wanted to tell certain, steps of the story. And so I've been doing paintings actually for a movie. So, it's fun. And no matter what people do, I say drawing is the basis of all creative arts or visual arts. You got to have drawing. So I teach a lot of drawing. I do love to draw, and I love to paint, and I love to sculpt. I love it all. And then movie making is probably, making movies, the whole process, because it's not just what you see on the screen. It's, months of pre-production. Then this is a very short time that you're actually shooting the movie. And then there's all the post-production, the editing and adding music. And these kids that I'm working with, they are fantastic at it. we bought them the equipment, the computer, and this stuff that, you know, that they needed to edit, and they just do so many great things. I love it. They just let their creativity flow and come out, and that there's nothing more exciting. And, you know, my program that I work on is called Art as Self-Therapy, Wellness Through Creativity, and that's the book I'm working on now. It'll be my fourth book, but it's really the passion of my life now is stirring up people's creative life. They're even older people like me that maybe have had it in there. And so that's why I have this subscription group. And it's fun to see people, even if they haven't done it in a long time, they're not identifying as artists, and whatever age they are, they want to learn more. So I encourage people, join us.
Yeah, and you can find, again, her website is KarenDeloachArt.com. So you do, obviously, the online classes. You've also written three books, How to Draw, How to Paint, and Art History and Appreciation. So I'm assuming they can get those on your website, or you could probably find them on Amazon, other places online.
Yeah, I don't actually own the textbook, Art History and Appreciation. The publishers, Kendall Hunt, own it. They solicited me as a writer, had two editions of it. So yeah, that's purchasable through Kendall Hunt or through Amazon, and my how to draw and how to paint books are on my website. I need to
Perfect.
Get my
so
other
I'll make sure. Yeah, definitely. You definitely want to get them out there, and I'll put those links around this video when we publish it, because I
Thank
would
you.
Love people to find those books and purchase those. And do you do anything in person, or is it strictly online at this point?
Oh, I did had a wonderful time doing a workshop here in the Charleston area just 2 weeks ago, just before Christmas, like one of those paint and sip parties, which I'd never done one like that before. We had a blast. I brought all the materials and the Ideal Life coaching. People let us have their facility and provided the drinks, and we just had a blast. You know, I gave them a lot of ideas, and they did their own thing, and we had a good time. So yeah, I love live, of course, but we all had our life changed in 2020, didn't we? Did we all learn to go online?
Yeah, that was the year that everybody would business up top and pajama pants on bottom, because we were Zoom calls all day, every day. So those were good times. You know, they weren't all bad. So if you're in the Charleston area, look up KarenDeloachArt.com. You might get lucky, be able to get down there and get a sip and paint sort of session. But definitely check out the website. Check out what her books are offering, and then sign up for these online classes. I actually would love to get my daughter signed up for one of your online classes. And
I have a 7-year-old girl in there, and I have a 14-year-old teenager in there. Yeah, that are just, we've been drawing. Well, we're going to do shading this month. We start tomorrow. So she's absolutely welcome. Tuesdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm still taking more people, so come join us, have fun.
Yeah, we're trying to, she's 11 now, and we're trying to eliminate the screen time as much as we can. Obviously, it's difficult because that's the way these kids grow up now, but also their school is all that way now. They, you know, when we were in school, we got 50 textbooks and your backpack was 95 pounds. Now they get a laptop, you know, they get a laptop they get to keep, and everything's digital. So it is convenient for like going back and forth to school and having, you know, your work on the cloud so you can not lose work. But it does add to the infinite amount of staring at a screen, which we're trying to eliminate, obviously. So I would love to do an art class, something to get her right brain. Is my left, my right brain. See, the left is too powerful. Left brain activated to get this creativity flowing. So I think we'll definitely sign up for that. And really, Karen, I just love your whole approach to life and your approach to therapy and helping people be artistic and using that as a method to self-therapy yourself. You know, I think that's really a brilliant way to put it. And
It was
honestly, this is one of my favorite conversations I've had.
Oh, listen, just try next time, and we could actually have a drawing lesson together with your audience. If, you know, as long as you have visuals, a video that you post,
so they could. I will make you a deal, because I am actually currently waiting on some new cameras that I've already ordered. So I'm working on some camera setups. I will get an overhead camera view. So you can see, and I did preface that I can barely do stick figures. So this will be a testament to your amazing teaching style, but also that I am not a liar. I cannot draw, but I will do that with you.
Oh, challenge accepted. Challenge accepted, okay. Joe.
All right. I think we just set up our next interview. I'll have to get that on the calendar. But as soon as I get my next setup all arranged, I'll get a boom arm. We're going to do this. We're going to draw with KarenDeloachArt.com, and we're going to see if I can pass the class.
Oh, I think so. Yes. All right. Challenge accepted. Woohoo!
I love it. Well, with that in mind, Karen, I want to thank you for coming on The Measuring Post. Again, KarenDeloachArt.com. Check her out. See about her online programs, her books, her mentoring. She's also ministers. She's an author, a speaker. This is the real deal right here, guys. So get involved with Karen Deloach. And like I said, I'll post your book links, your website as well when the video goes live. And I would love to bring you back for a session for me to learn how to draw.
Perfect. Thank you so much. It was fun.
Thanks, Karen. Have a wonderful day.
God bless. You too. Bye-bye.